Welcome to the RBC podcast. My name is Matthias Kleins, and today we will be talking about how the diet of mothers can affect the future of their offspring. So do you also believe that a mother-to-be will have to eat for two? Then think again. The latest research by Stephanie Bayol and Neil Stickland at the Royal Veterinary College suggests that mothers who do this might be doing their child a disservice, at least when their eating for two means simply following their cravings. Today we will find out exactly how the dietary habits of mothers may affect the diet and health of their baby for years to come, at least in rats. So Neil and Stephanie, in your recent research you have looked at fetal programming in relation to nutrition in a rat model. Could you tell us more about what fetal programming is in the first place and what your major findings were?
Okay, well, fetal programming is a term that was really first coined by workers on the human side, particularly David Barker, who works at Southampton. And he did many epidemiological studies which showed essentially a link between low birth weight in the human and problems with disease in later life. Cardiovascular disease in particular has been linked to early birth weight, and other problems also linked to low birth weight. I think that the term now is not used quite so much, it's a little bit out of vogue, but the concept of fetal programming is still very much an important research topic.
So what we're talking about with fetal programming is not necessarily just the acute effects of, for example, nutrition on a fetus, but also the long-term effects, is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, the nutrition in the womb has effect on many tissue systems, and this seems to have a long-term effect right into adulthood in many systems.
Stephanie, you could possibly tell us more details about the way you try to address this question in your rat model and what your major findings were.
So, most studies on a link between maternal nutrition and fetal programming was focused on maternal undernutrition, and we thought that nowadays, in Western society, there is a problem of overeating, and we developed an animal model to look at the influence of maternal overfeeding on the offspring and see whether we could get a similar mechanism for fetal programming. So we've developed this rat model where we feed the rats a selection of foods that are designed for human consumption, and those foods are palatable, they are dense in calories, they contain high levels of fat, sugar and salt, and we look at the effects of those diets in the offspring.
So what did you see when you fed the mother rat with this cafeteria diet, as you call it?
Okay, well, there are two main studies, I guess. The first study, a little while ago, showed that if you fed the junk food diet or a control diet to the pregnant rats, we looked first of all at the weaning stage, which is about 3 weeks after birth in the rat. And in those particular animals, we found the offspring of the cafeteria junk food fed rats had higher proportion of fat, but interestingly, the muscles were exhibiting atrophy. They were smaller, they even had fewer muscle fibers, and there was evidence of fat within the fibers, which is one of the signals for a development of insulin resistance. In the second, more recent study, more recently published, we showed that the offspring of the cafeteria-fed rats showed three main characteristics. Firstly, they put on more weight than the offspring from the control rats. Secondly, they exhibited hyperphagia, or overeating, they ate more. And thirdly, they showed a very significant preference for the junk food themselves, so there seemed to be a programming of the kind of food that they wanted to eat as well.
So despite the fact that based on the abundant nutrition of their mothers and the fact that as a result those little rats probably were bigger than their counterparts in other parts of the study, those rats also ate more in the end, is that right?
Yeah, the rats were born to mother's weight. The junk food during pregnancy and lactation were eating more energy compared with other rats that were also given free access to junk food but whose mothers were fed a balanced diet during pregnancy and lactation. And because within that, the sort of nutrient that they chose to increase their intake of were fat, sugar and salt, which are the components that give food its palatability. So we think that there is a sort of preference for palatable foods rich in fat, sugar and salt.
So it would seem that diet has not only an effect on the actual development of the body itself, but also on behavior after birth, right? And what you're suggesting is that food preference is determined in the mother's womb already, a food preference of the offspring is determined in the mother's womb.
Yes, it appears that way. I mean, the maternal undernutrition models have shown that maternal undernutrition itself can influence the feeding behavior in the offspring. Mm-hmm. And we found that this was also the case with a maternal junk food diet. And we haven't investigated the mechanisms behind that, but we think that it appears that the appetite centers in the brain of the offspring are being affected by exposure to a maternal junk food diet during gestation, but also during lactation.
I mean, interestingly, if I can just add one extra point, as these rats got older, actually the problem got worse. So as the offspring of the cafeteria-fed rats got older, they actually ate a higher and higher proportion of their food as junk food compared to the rat chow, because they're all given access to both the normal rat food and junk food, but the junk food fed offspring ate more and more. So the problem actually was compounded and got worse.
Do you know what the reason for that is? And also, do you have a theory of what component of the cafeteria diet which you were feeding to these rats actually had this effect on behavior of the offspring?
We're not sure. What we're seeing is that when we've measured what the mothers were eating, we found that even though they were increasing their total energy intake, the protein intake in the junk food fed mothers was reduced by about 35%, 37%. And there's a paper using on the low protein diet model for fetal programming that has found that offspring from mothers fed a low protein diet also developed overeating and a preference for high fat food. So it appears that protein level might be a contributing factor to the programming of appetite. But in this study, we also have the high fat, high sugar, high palatability component of the diet that might also influence appetite behavior in the offspring. And obviously more work needs to be done to sort of try to determine which factors are important for the fetal programming of a preference for junk food.
That's an interesting point you raised there, but if I imagine that you want to feed a low protein diet to an animal and you still have to maintain the basic caloric intake which is necessary to keep the animal alive, inevitably we will have either a high carbohydrate or a high fat diet in response to this. Would that be a confounding factor to the results you've seen in your studies? Would that impair validity of the results?
No, it's interesting, and there are studies that have looked at the different elements of nutrition. There are certainly lots of studies that have looked at low protein diet, everything else the same, high fat diets, everything else the same, and so on. So, and those studies do produce clear effects in the offspring, but they're not as pronounced as the kind of effects we're getting. And I think it's because this is the situation is multifactorial. You put two factors together, and you often get much more than the sum of those two. And I think these factors are interacting, so you're compounding the problem and getting much bigger effects. But certainly, we do need to know a bit more about the different elements in some ways, but I don't think it'll answer all the questions we might have.
So Stephanie, it would suggest there's synergies between low protein and potentially high fat and high carbohydrates, which we find in the diet that you fed to your animals, right?
Yeah, that would probably multiply the effect. Yeah, that you would get when you just manipulate one of those nutrients. The only thing I would like to add to this is that in our model, the rats were on the junk food diet had free access to the healthy balanced diet. So if they reduce their protein intake, it's because they chose to, not because we forced them. And it's probably because they enjoyed eating the palatable food more, that they just reduced their protein intake by themselves. We don't really know, but it was self-inflicted. It wasn't something that we pushed upon the animals.
Mm-hmm. Do we know which centers in the brain are involved in mediating effects like this? Because assuming that it's a behavioral effect, you were talking about the effect on muscle growth in the first place, but there's also the behavioral effect. Which parts of the brain are responsible for this?
Yeah, obviously, the appetite is regulated within the brains, and at the moment, there is the mechanisms that regulate appetite are not really well understood. But as far as we understand it, you've got some, like, two levels of regulation. You've got factors in the brain that regulate normal energy or homeostasis, so they regulate the feeling of fullness versus the feeling of hunger. And then you've got other factors that are known as reward centers that will respond to the palatability of the food and make the act of eating a pleasurable experience. And what the idea at the moment is that when those reward centers are stimulated, they can override the normal controls of feel of fullness, of satiety, if you like. And we think that perhaps in our study the reward centers are involved, and they might explain why the offspring are overeating junk food.
Previously you've already touched upon the issue whether this might be applicable to humans as well, because often scientists make the assumption, but we don't really know whether that is a justified assumption to make. What do you think is the implication of this particular study to humans?
Well, of course, that's a very crucial question, and you can't be absolutely sure. You know, you can't do the experiment in humans. That wouldn't be terribly ethical.
Even though some people might volunteer.
Well, you never know. you can actually, you know, ask mothers what they ate during pregnancy and find out what the children eat and all that. So you can go some way. But, you know, we've talked to our colleagues in medical schools who do this sort of work, and they say it's notoriously difficult to always get the truth from people who are eating, particularly if there's junk food involved.
And retrospective studies are criticised for other reasons as
well. I think it's difficult. But what we know, the rats are not the only models used in these sorts of works. You know, we ourselves work on pigs, even chickens and so on. People have worked on lots of lab animals, sheep, pigs. And the basic tenant of this fetal programming is true across all these species. So
at least across mammalian species.
Across mammalian species. Well, I'd say actually even
chickens,
fish.
So
you've got this aspect of fetal programming, mm-hmm. whatever you'd like to call it. And there are studies that have been done, a recent study within the last year or so in the States, that have shown that fat mothers tend to give rise to fat offspring, which is, you know, it ties in with the work we're getting mm-hmm. here. But again,
and that's not only at birth, but in future times.
That is, but of course, that's, you know, the interpretation of those courts, that sort of data is very difficult.
Yes.
Maybe those kids are in a house with more
yeah,
junk food anyway,
so
very difficult. But there are some human studies that on the surface seem to bear out the studies we're getting in the human.
So I think we could assume that there is possibly a difference in, so to say, the dose effect between animals and humans. So this effect might be more pronounced in rats than in humans. But ultimately, because of the consistency of the findings between different mammalian and non-mammalian species, we can assume that in general this might be applicable to us as well.
I might even think it was even more applicable to humans. The concept of reward centers is really coming from the human studies rather than animals, mm-hmm. and you might imagine that's further developed in humans. I'd be very surprised if it's not strongly applied to humans.
In humans, you've got a lot of factors that would influence somebody's appetite. You would have things like social, psychological factors. You know, a family is storing a lot of junk food in their house, and the children might be influenced, you know, to eat that sort of food because it's there. But the advantage of the animal model is that you remove all those external factors and you're left with a true physiological link between the maternal diet and the influence of the offspring. Now, like in human, that direct link might be diluted, because other factors are coming into the equation. However, that this is the advantage of the animal models over, you know, the human one.
So do you think you have any chance of extrapolating from your findings, for example, how much junk food a human mother can actually get away with eating during the pregnancy before this becomes detrimental to the health of their offspring?
Well, in this particular study, we've only looked at one setup. So, we've quantified how much the mothers were eating, and we found that the overall energy intake was increased by 50%, which is obviously over than what's recommended in humans. However, it's not that much. And also 80% of the total energy intake came from the junk food source. So we're talking about a situation where the mothers are eating a large proportion of junk food. Okay, it's not about the odd chocolate treats or the donuts here and there. So we're only looking at extreme
situations. So almost replacement of healthy food with junk food.
80%. So, but you know, I'm sure you can find people with that amount.
So mothers out there shouldn't be too concerned about the odd chocolate bar they might.
Yeah, it's not about making people, you know, guilty for having eaten, you know, the odd chocolate bar or donut, but be aware that eating too much junk food might influence the development of the offspring, basically.
So based on your findings, really what we should be concerned about is raising awareness in mothers about this potential link, at least. I think really making anyone nervous about it at the moment is probably not justified yet. We might need some more proof of principle, but it's no harm in being aware of these things, right?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is a study in rats, and we believe that it probably is applicable across the animal kingdom, but you can't categorically state that. But it is sensible to eat healthy food during gestation and also the lactation period. I think that's also a key period. Childhood obesity is a hugely increasing problem worldwide. Now, the government actually is doing great stuff in dealing with school dinners. I mean, Jamie Oliver's done a lot to push that. And I think he's actually done a good thing, generally. So school dinners, important to get that right. And exercise for kids, that's important. And I guess what we're showing in our research that we probably ought to be looking even earlier than that, at the pregnant mother and during the lactation period, even before the kids go to school. You know, you're setting up the potential for these young kids to possibly develop obesity, and again with a clear proviso if the rat work translates to human.
So really what it boils down to in the end is that given the fact that diet has such a huge impact potentially on the health of children, that mothers will have to become aware of the fact that eating for two during pregnancy is probably not such a good idea, right?
Yeah, that's right. You hear a lot of women would justify their increased intake of junk food because on the basis that they are eating for two. And what this study is showing is that it might not be such a good idea to overindulge all those fatty and sugary treats because that might impair the development of the offspring.
So we just hope that a lot of people listen to this podcast and make the required changes to their diet in the future.
The message that people should try to eat a healthy, balanced diet is already out there, and you're not bringing anything new,
but
except
I think we need
for
to
the
re-emphasize
fact that we're
it.
Yeah, we're emphasizing that this message is particularly important when pregnant and breastfeeding, because that will affect, or that might affect, the offspring into adulthood.
Well, good luck. I hope that your work will have the impact you're hoping for. And I also wish you good luck with all the future studies which you'll conduct in order to investigate this further.
Thank you.
Well, that's it from us for today. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope you will tune in again in the future. In the meantime, we would welcome your feedback and suggestions, which you can send to podcast@rbc.ac.uk. Goodbye.